council.
Four,
I'm wrong. Gary L. Maynard versus Keith Nijen, and acting as sheriff of McHenry County, Illinois.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Kenneth Runes, R-U-N-E-S, on behalf of the appellants. We are appealing the dismissal of a case in the trial court and sanctions which were imposed against not only Harry L. Maynard, but his attorneys, Patricia Jochum and Dennis Bavero. This case was dismissed because of the failure to produce this one document that I'm holding. This is a letter that was dated April 4th, 1996, and it's brief enough, but its content is critical in that what it says is on April 4th, 1996, Mr. Maynard was not ready to go back to work. He had been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and it said that it is hoped that he will be able to return to work in the next 90 days. It is the contention of the defendant that this document was intentionally withheld and that it was discovered only after going through a subpoena with the doctor that wrote it a few weeks before trial. The court found that the plaintiff had intentionally withheld the document, that the attorneys had not intentionally withheld the document. The court also speculated in its ruling that the plaintiff may have come to the attorney's office and removed the document from the file. Well, certainly there was no testimony that he had even seen the document, Judge.
That who had?
Mr. Maynard. That
right.
He had seen the document in the attorney's office. There was no testimony provided by the attorneys or either personally or through affidavit that the document had been in their office. This case is really a poster child, as we view it, for why there need to be clear standards, not only for dismissal, but for sanctions against attorneys. We have a situation where evidence was...
Were you the attorney of record in the case?
No, I was not an attorney of record in the trial court. I am now for procedural reasons, Judge. I am, for the record, of counsel to the firm that was attorney of record in the trial court. But evidence was presented before the judge in a two-day hearing in February of 2002 by the doctor's office stating that this document had been prepared in April of 1996. They testified to their procedures in terms of copying documents, making them part of the record. They testified that they had not found the original of this in their file, and therefore their conclusion, which the judge accepted, is that it must be in the hands of the plaintiff. There was also testimony that nobody ever observed Harry Maynard to remove this document from the doctor's office. So we have an issue in terms of this level of evidence, and based on this, the judge denying Harry Maynard his day in court, and also issuing rulings that are quite damaging to the reputation and financial interests of attorneys. We have argued, and there doesn't seem to have been a counter-argument on this point, that the standard of evidence in dismissal in this circuit should be clear and convincing evidence. We've cited the discussion in Danis, which is out of the Northern District. We've cited Gates Rubber, which is from another district. We've also cited Shepard versus ABC, which is from the District of Columbia.
Do we know what Judge Reinhardt's standard was here for this decision?
I would say yes, we do. And actually, on page A12 and A13 of the appendix, when you look at his ruling, in two instances, he said that he found it more likely than not that something occurred.
Suppose we find it clear and convincing. What's the result then?
Are you asking if you find clear and convincing, do we then win?
If we find the evidence is clear and convincing, do you lose on this point?
Oh, I think clearly if you find that there's clear and convincing evidence, of course we do lose. Our position is that no matter which standard you apply, be it preponderance or clear and convincing, that Mr. Maynard should not
have... Is that our question we can decide, or we send it back to Judge Reinhardt?
I think that all of the evidence that could have been before Judge Reinhardt is actually before you, and yes, I do believe that you can make a decision to reverse him at this point. If you decline to do that, certainly the next appropriate fallback position that we would ask you for is to send it back to either Judge Reinhardt or a different judge. We've made that argument in our brief. But to conduct a hearing pursuant to the clear and convincing evidence standard.
Why does there have to be a hearing? You said he heard all the evidence.
Well, I suppose that on that basis the judge could review the record and issue another ruling. The effect, we believe, of what the judge did, certainly with regard to his statements of Mr. Maynard's denials of having it, and judge went through a series of documents that he then concluded that Mr. Maynard had lied on, including an amended complaint and an affidavit. The effect of that, in our view, was to transfer the burden of proof to Mr. Maynard to disprove that he had had the document. In fact, it was the burden of the defendant in their motion to dismiss to prove, and again, we believe it should be by clear and convincing evidence, that not only that Mr. Maynard possessed the document, and again, he did find that the attorneys did not willfully withhold the document, so that's a different set of facts and a different set of issues, but also, before you reach dismissal under National Hockey League and that string of cases, there has to be some discussion that wasn't here as to why dismissal was the only appropriate sanction. The judge did reach, at one point, a brief discussion of one other possible sanction that he could have imposed, that being an instruction to the jury, but he really doesn't go into any detail as to why that was inappropriate. Doesn't go into any discussion as to why justifying just a bar of evidence of some sort or any other sanction might have been appropriate as opposed to dismissal. And as stated in Gates Rubber and elsewhere, there is certainly a public policy that favors providing somebody with his day in court rather than dismissing it on this basis. With going back, actually, it appears that I've entered my time for rebuttal, so if there are no other questions.
All right. Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Jim Harrison. I'm a Special Assistant State's Attorney for the County of McHenry, and I represent Sheriff Keith Nygren in this action. Good morning, Counsel. Your Honors, this case did pose quite a row in the Western District because it was discovered that evidence had been withheld. And although there was a single document, as counsel indicates, that single document that was held indicated that Mr. Maynard was unable to perform the essential functions of his duties and that his concurring doctor found likewise that he was unable to work. There was some language, as counsel indicated, about 90 days and see how he would be at that time. But the fact of the matter was the timing of this document. In March, Mr. Maynard filed received a release from his doctor indicating they'd be subject to recurrent episodes of weakness or unsteadiness. The chief of corrections found that was incompatible with his work as a correctional officer in a maximum security jail facility. Mr. Maynard then, a month later, or toward the end of March, asked for a medical leave of absence. He was requested and required to produce a doctor's note in order to have a medical leave of absence approved. Now, Dr. Nager, Mr. Maynard's doctor, testified that Mr. Maynard contacted him on or about the time of that letter, told him that he needed something that was different than the March 4th letter, removing the language about weakness and unsteadiness, and Dr. Maynard drafted the document, which is the April 4th document. Unfortunately, that didn't work for Mr. Maynard either because it rendered him unable to perform the essential functions of the job. Mr. Maynard went on to file a labor grievance. saying that his doctor wouldn't change the language from the March 4th release, and that the March 4th release was actually a release for him to return to work without restrictions. After his labor grievance was abandoned by Mr. Maynard, he filed a charge of discrimination, alleging that his doctor would not change the March 4th release, although his doctor had already changed it on April 4th. He then filed a lawsuit and made the same contention, and then filed an amended complaint and made the same contention. And the district court found that that document was intentionally withheld, and that he had frustrated the court. And
why did he say it was withheld? What did he base that ruling on, please?
What did the judge?
As far as the lawyer was concerned, not the client.
The judge stated with respect to counsel that one of three things was believed to have occurred. Either he did find that the document, in fact, the court said there's little likelihood that the document wasn't copied and sent by the doctor's office, and he found that it was. Once it got to counsel's office, the court found one of three things occurred. Either the attorneys intentionally did not disclose it, or the attorneys negligently lost it, or the attorneys allowed Mr. Maynard to come in and access the file, and that he removed it. The court did speculate.
Without that. Their knowledge?
The court didn't speculate whether their knowledge, they had knowledge or not.
Well, he said allowed. He meant with their knowledge, didn't he?
Well, allowed to see the file. I don't know whether the court intended that to mean that the attorneys were cooperating with Mr. Maynard in removing it or not. But the court did find, and it is correct, it's very coincidental that the same document that Mr. Maynard said he didn't ask for and that the doctor, according to him, created on his own on April 4th of 1996 was also the very same document that the attorneys didn't receive in discovery. Nonetheless, Dr. Martinez still had that document in his file. As part of the file, it was a very short
file. There's no finding against the attorneys beyond negligence, is there?
That's what the court said, Judge, that either the attorneys did A, B, or C.
Is there any authority for sanctioning the attorneys for negligence? There's case
no,
law
Judge,
on
there's
intentional bad faith and so on.
Yes,
so
Judge.
There's nothing I could find on negligence.
No, Judge, I agree. But what was suspect, I believe, was the fact that we had requested a release from Mr. Maynard to produce, so we could access and acquire his medical records. They didn't provide the release. Instead, the attorney said, we will provide the records to you. And then when the records came to them and were later disclosed, they didn't include that document.
Did you ask them why they didn't give you the release that you asked for?
No, Judge. When this all arose, it was within 4 weeks of trial. When this document surfaced,
right,
we were within 4 weeks of trial and we had to move quickly.
And you didn't explore it any further?
I did not interrogate the attorneys. No, Judge, I did not.
How about the clear and convincing problem?
Well, you know, Judge, I was up.
I think this opinion of the D.C. Circuit, isn't it, and Shepard, isn't that pretty generally accepted? Dismiss, you're supposed to have clear and convincing.
Well, the Seventh Circuit hasn't decided yet, but yes, Judge, there are other circuits that have decided clear and convincing evidence is the standard. The Seventh Circuit has even held
Is there any circuit that's found any other standard?
Not that I have found, Judge. I was up looking till 1 o'clock last night.
What do we do here in this case?
Well, Judge, even if you were to hold the plaintiff to defendant to a clear and convincing standard, we've reached it. We've reached that standard and then some. A high probability of truth, clear and convincing evidence. And the evidence is clear and convincing that Mr. Maynard had that document and didn't disclose it and kept the subterfuge going for a matter of years, costing the sheriff and county thousands of dollars in defense costs, only to learn that had we known this information much, much earlier when it rose, we would have known that he was unable to
perform. Isn't that a decision that Judge Reinhardt ought to make, however?
What standard he applied?
Yeah,
yes, I think
he doesn't really articulate that.
No, he didn't articulate which part of Rule 37 he dismissed under either. He dismissed under Rule. He granted our motion for sanctions under Rule 37, and then he granted a lot of sanctions, which may be both within the inherent power of the court or under Rule 37C, Rule 37B, or possibly under Rule 26 rules pertaining to disclosure. The district court, I'm sure, could articulate clearer, if the court found it necessary, why it did what it did, and on what standard of proof it had. And the court didn't say more likely than not. The court said, more likely. I find that it is more likely. More likely than that? I don't know. He also found that the document was, that there's little likelihood that the document wasn't sent. Little likelihood, I
would. Little likelihood what?
That the document was not sent to counsel's office. I find that to be more than a preponderance standard.
Let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
Does the doctor's office have to have the consent to send it to the attorney of his patient?
No, they were sending it pursuant to our production request, Judge. I don't believe that...
To the other attorney, does he have... If he sends it to the client...
Yes, Judge.
If he sends anything out regarding the client's health,
yes,
does he have to have the client's consent before he can do it?
Not with... Unless they're mental health records, not in the presence of a court order. In the absence of a court order, yes, Judge, I believe a release would be necessary.
So what proof do you have, then, that he sent it out to this... That the doctor's office, isn't this what you're saying?
Yes, Judge.
Sent it to the defendant himself, or to the plaintiff himself?
We sent it to the plaintiff?
Okay,
these are two different time frames. Plaintiff was in 96 that they said that the plaintiff received it, and counsel would have received it in February of 99. There was a three-year gap.
I understand that.
Okay.
But you're saying that he did. Aren't you also arguing that he did send it to the plaintiff at some time?
We're contending that the plaintiff picked it up from the doctor's office the day that it was drafted. Yes, Judge.
All right, okay.
And that was from testimony from doctor staff that...
But not that he ever sent it to him.
No, not that they ever sent it to the plaintiff. They sent it to the plaintiff's attorneys, not to the plaintiff. The plaintiff, they put it out in the doctor's office in an envelope to be picked up. If it's not picked up, they return it to the original file. The original wasn't in the file, and only the copy was. Based upon that, the court deduced, and I believe by clear and convincing evidence, that in fact that document was picked up by Mr. Maynard. Mr. Maynard also had amnesia about on cross-examination about many issues that were very clear, but he seemed to recall all facts.
Didn't he also say that was he involved in something to the effect that... Yeah. I don't want to go back to the same doctor because I'll get the same report.
Mr. Maynard may... I don't know that he ever testified to that, Judge. No, right. I do not. For all of the reasons, the court has, in fact, by an appropriate standard and by clear and convincing evidence, if that is the standard, proven that a fraud was perpetrated upon the court that went to the heart of this litigation and cost thousands of dollars in defense that were unnecessary. We would ask for the court to affirm the district court.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
All right, counsel.
Counsel has talked about a high probability and the judge finding that it was very coincidental the document not being in the hands of Mr. Maynard or his attorneys. Neither of those, high probability nor coincidental, gets you to the level of clear and convincing evidence. If Judge Reinhart said that it was more likely, or more likely than not, frankly, I'm not sure as I stand here, but if he's saying more likely, to my knowledge, that is preponderance. The document that we're talking about, which Sheriff Nygren says prejudiced him so much that it was received only 4 weeks before trial, is in content the same as the document at B-116 of the appendix, which is a letter from March 25th, 1996, from Dr. Nager. Dr. Nager said, in effect, he's not ready to go back to work now. Parts of the MS interfere with his ability to go back to work now, but perhaps in the next few months he will be able to go back to work. There's no way, number one, that defendant Nygren was prejudiced. Number two, the relevant time frame is when the termination occurred, and that was September of 1997. These documents preceded that by 17 or 18 months. The most recent medical reports that Sheriff Nygren had were the two Dr. Setti reports that were in January and March of 1997, and it was based on those that Judge Reinhart at summary judgment said there is a question of fact as to whether Mr. Maynard was a qualified individual under the ADA. This document, received whenever it was, didn't change the fact that the most relevant and the most recent reports that had been before the court, the Dr. Setti reports, created that issue of fact. A grave injustice has been done by denying Mr. Maynard his day in court and by the sanctions to him and to the attorneys, and we would ask that you correct that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you.